Have you ever had a feeling that something dreadful was about to happen?
This whole premise is sweaty.
Okay, moving right along.
You gonna plagiarize the whole thing for us? Do you have any thoughts of your own on this matter?
Just remember that this thing isn't as black as it appears.
Hold on to your butt.
The only difference between me and a homeless man is his job.
I'm glad you're here to tell us.
I'm looking for the least possible amount of responsibility.
And that ain't bad.
I'm in a glass case of emotion.
Man's got to know his limitations.
I'm glad you came back.
In the bag.
Network.
I drink it up.
Welcome to the Bag Pod, everyone. We've got the usual crew in the house. We've got Joe Dog, Jimmy TV, and Alan P.
Hey.
just throw it in the bag.
Oh, off to a raucous start yet again this week. We'll be, of course, discussing our usual topics of the past weekend's Game of Thrones and Mad Men episodes. Let's start off with Game of Thrones. I found it interesting, I guess, that in the opening credits, they did not change Winterfell's sigil to the Kraken.
Good call.
I thought that was a little interesting, considering Theon.
Were you expecting it to change?
I wasn't expecting it, but I was also... I mean, I would say maybe it would have been interesting if...
It's a missed opportunity.
Yeah, it would have been interesting, at least, I would say.
It costs a bit of money to update the opening credits.
Yeah. Clearly they don't have enough.
They don't have the Kraken technology.
No. But yeah.
Maybe they couldn't get a release on the Kraken.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, let's I'm going to pretend that didn't even happen.
I just got it.
Jimmy
that was
TV.
Polite.
Of course, we start off in Winterfell. This is we get some choice Theon nonsense this episode. Theon is clearly a terrible ruler. He doesn't seem to know what he's doing. He doesn't seem to really have a game plan, as we've discussed before. He seems almost to just go with the flow. I mean, it feels like he's following someone's orders, but we never really see anyone tell him what to do. So I don't know. It just seems he seems fairly weak. And
yeah, he's the worst kind of ruler. He's inexperienced, and he has he feels like he has something to prove to his dad. I mean, he's the George W. Bush of Westeros, and he just charges headfirst into a situation. He has no idea how he's gonna what his next move is.
Mm-hmm. Would you rather have him ruling or Joffrey ruling?
Joffrey, god damn it! I'd rather have Theon.
Yeah, I mean, I don't Theon. Even though Theon's just not naturally cruel, he's just stupid.
Yeah.
Whereas Joffrey just gets his jollies off being cruel.
Torturing prostitutes.
I mean, you can sum up Theon's character in the one line he said to Maester Cressen when they were hunting down Bran and Rickon, where he said something along the lines of, "It's all a game," or, you know, something along those lines. And I think that just basically sums him up. He enjoys doing all of this stuff, but he doesn't really know.
Is he enjoying it? Is he enjoying it? It looked like he was kind of being more a little cocksure, trying to put on a little show. I don't think
yeah.
He's having that much fun.
I think he was having fun with the hunting, at least. I don't know if he's having fun with the actual ruling and stuff, but I think he would enjoy. He might enjoy more. He doesn't enjoy the reaps of his forebears. I don't know what I'm saying right
what?
Now. No, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
It just kind of seems that, like, he doesn't want to be in this situation from the get-go. You know, he went back home to the Iron Islands to negotiate a peace, and I think that's the role he thought he was going to play, and he mm-hmm. quickly realized he was going to have to choose.
Yeah. I would agree. But yeah, poor Theon. He doesn't seem to know what he's doing.
He's blowing it.
Yeah. Another person that doesn't know what he's doing is Mr. Jon Snow above the wall. as Yreet points out multiple times.
She emasculated him.
Yes, she did.
She really did.
She really enjoyed
bringing
up his bones.
She really busted his blue balls.
Yes, yes she did. We get some more.
She's like, what about those sheep? Aren't there some sheep up on that wall?
Yeah, dude, I was dying off that because Kjorn called them sheep fuckers last episode.
I know. I knew you would like that, Jimmy TV. I knew
yeah,
you
that was awesome.
We get some more. It was nice to actually see Yagreet and John interact. I thought their scene where they had the fight right after it was in the beginning of the episode where they had that whole fight. I thought that was a really good scene. It was nice to see them. They actually have some chemistry on screen. I feel like there's
some.
Yeah, it's not like I mean when she's trying to be overly flirtatious and so that kind of kills the chemistry a little bit almost. But I think they work pretty well together.
What fight are you talking about?
A lot of delightful boner jokes.
They have like a they have an argument at the beginning, near the beginning of the show.
About like what's to be free.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So I thought that was
about how all wars are bullshit.
Exactly.
Jon Snow fight, is though. You know telling her that she was a literal prisoner and she was saying that his whole life is a prison.
Can't even fuck sheep.
Nope.
You can't fuck sheep. You are a prisoner.
Mm-hmm. No sheep for you.
But yeah, no. So I thought I enjoyed that, and of course, clearly we got a lot of Yagreet talking about bones as Jimmy
talking about pulling a knife on her and the like.
Mm-hmm. Talking about pressing your bones on a woman's ass is always nice. And I thought it was hilarious. John got so up in arms when she called him. When she was talking about his balls.
Stones.
You cannot talk about them like that.
Yeah, he wasn't too happy. Yeah, we actually saw some emotion out of Jon Snow, which we usually don't really see too much out of.
Yeah.
Usually he's pretty wooden. So it's nice to see him be a little bit different.
Very true indeed.
Pun intended, very wooden.
they clearly stated what John's goal was, which was to bring her back. And, of course, she, in fact, brings up the fact, like, what the hell are you going to do when you bring me back to your black brothers, to the other wall men, if you will. But, I mean, I'm just wondering what John is thinking. Like, I mean, he's got this woman in tow. I mean, even if she doesn't, you know, proclaim rape or whatever, like, what do you think is going to happen to her?
What are you talking about?
Like, what did he think was going to happen?
Yeah, like, why is he bringing her back to the Black Brothers there? I mean, what does he think is going to happen to her when he brings her back?
I don't know. Was he maybe a little afraid that he would die out there by himself? That, you know, maybe he might need her as a guide if he can't find his way?
I mean, maybe. That can definitely be one thing. I think now more so than when he first decided not to kill her. But it's just, I don't know, it just seems weird. It just seems weird why he's planning on bringing her back and what he thinks is going to happen.
Where was he going? Do you think he was trying to meet up with Khorne with the Half-Hand, or do you think he was just going to take her back to the Fist?
It sounded like he was going back to the Fist.
That's what I kind of thought, too, for a second.
Sounded like he didn't know where the hell he was going.
Well, that sounds like she wanted him to take her to the Fist.
Sounded like she wanted to get a good look at his angry fist.
Yep.
If they didn't want these kind of conversations to take place, they wouldn't have talked about the stones and bones for so long.
Didn't she say something about it being angry?
Yeah, she did.
Yeah,
the dirt
purple and angry.
All angry as you like.
Yeah.
Would you have been able to do it? I wouldn't have been able to kill her.
Oh, I thought you were talking about something else.
No.
I mean,
my hands are too big. Do you think you could do it?
Okay. I don't know what to say. I can't respond to any of these things anymore.
No, in all seriousness, I couldn't. I don't think I would have been able to kill a woman.
Yeah, but would you have? The question then would become: if you didn't kill her, would you have just let her go, or would you have taken her prisoner?
That's the thing.
Tried to decide what to do with her.
I think I would have made the same dumb decision he did, because I would probably be thinking, well, if I let her go, as soon as I turn the corner, she's going to sneak out of nowhere with a stone and kill me.
I suppose that's fair.
So I don't know what I would have
done. With his stones?
Okay. All right. We're moving below the wall after that last Joe Dog joke.
Was that a pun?
I think we're pretty much done with them anyway. Let's stick with the course and finish this off here real quick. but in all seriousness, we pretty much have beaten this to death. So we do know that they get captured, and yeah, that's that. So yeah, he obviously fucked this one up.
Do you think? Where do we think his capture's going? Do you think he's going to end up her prisoner now? I mean, I assume they're going to discuss trying to kill him. Or do you think she's just going to let him go, unlike...
Let him go? No.
Yeah, they're not letting his ass go.
Yeah, so he'll be her prisoner now.
Something like that. I mean, we don't...
They're going to take him to the King Beyond the Wall.
Yeah.
Matt's Raider.
Or use him as sheep.
Has Matt been cast yet? Do we know?
I believe so.
Does he show up in this season, though? I don't think he does.
I mean, if he's been cast, then he's going to show up in this season. I'm not positive he's been cast, though.
Okay. Well, while you look that up, we'll go south of the wall, and we'll talk about some Harrenhal. Yet another really awesome scene between Tywin and Arya.
So good.
Okay, he has not been cast yet.
Oh, he's not.
I think the Lord of Bones has.
Lord
though.
Of Bones, no pun intended.
The Lord of Bones has been cast.
Rattle shirt, that is.
we got some good exteriors of Harrenhal, I thought.
Yeah, we did. This was like the first time where we actually got a really nice shot of Harrenhal and just how shitty it looks.
It was awesome and so much better than that cheesy ass one they did of King's Landing in the first season when they brought it up to Shay and she was still kind of in the middle of the green screen and it looked like crap.
Yeah, you mean in the first episode?
Yeah. Compared to that, this looked. I mean, it looked great to start with, and then even when they brought it all the way back to Tywin, it still looked awesome. It was just really well done in general, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's maybe a little easier to get graphics together if they're darker and a little cloudy than really bright and King's Landing-y, so.
True that.
But yeah, no, I thought it was really nice to actually finally get to see Harrenhal and all of its shittiness, all of its crumbliness, so that was nice. And then, of course, when Tywin and Arya have another exchange, it's just really good. Tywin, Dance there, he plays, he seems to get, like, this little joy in his step that he hasn't had in any of his previous scenes when he's with Arya and he's talking to her. And he's kind of seeing, I mean, clearly he's kind of seeing maybe a little bit of himself.
He likes her so much. And
and you definitely, he pretty much lays it out by saying that she reminds him of his daughter. I mean, I think that's really kind of the way that he looks at her, is kind of a daughter-granddaughter type thing. And while he certainly suspects that something's not all that it seems, he considers it to be just such a low amount of threat that he doesn't think too much of it, I guess.
Is he proud of Cersei and Jaime? Obviously, kind of maybe a little bit of
Jaime, not Cersei. I mean, I don't think he likes Cersei and what's been going on in King's Landing at all. So I think his opinion of her is very low. And with Jaime recently being captured, I think he's just kind of an old lonely dude. And then there's this delightful little girl that he likes.
Yeah, I mean, I feel maybe as though that it kind of harkens to what Cersei says later in the episode about how mothers will love their children regardless. Like, I mean, Tywin might not be proud of them, but I mean, they are his kids, so he still has, you know, some connection to them. I was thinking maybe, when he calls Arya Cersei, if maybe he's not thinking Cersei from when she was a girl as opposed to what she's become.
Oh, well, that's obvious.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
yeah, I hope so. I was going to say is does he, like, he sees the promise in Arya and he's like, oh, you know, Cersei was like that at one point, but then she went and screwed everything up. Maybe the same thing about Jaime. With Tyrion, like, obviously he thinks Tyrion's a fuck up, but not but you know, has some respect for him, obviously, with him being the hand and all. So I was kind of curious if, you know, like, you know, that it's obviously it echoes his relationship with Cersei. I mean, he even says it. But yeah, I thought maybe that it kind of hinted a little bit, maybe like the joy that he gets out of seeing Arya is in contrast to the lack of joy that he gets out of Cersei now.
Right. I think he's what he would want in any potential Lannister is what Arya is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Arya too has become much more comfortable around Tywin, and he even makes sure to mention that a couple times too, and she just sasses him right back, which is real fun to see. It's real nice. Speaking of hints, though, we had that supposedly intense close up of Tywin's neck.
Oh yeah, that
Arya is holding the knife.
Yeah, in a stabbing motion.
Yeah.
She's got a good grip on it.
Mm-hmm. So perhaps this is the first time that we're getting a hint that she actually wants is perhaps even thinking about killing Tywin, and she does have one death left from Jaqen H'ghar there. So
does she say his name, or did she say it? She's only recited names so one time. Is that right? Like before she went to sleep, or whatever. She's done that a few times.
They dropped it in the past couple episodes, but she's. Yeah. She's done it a few times. There was,
I think she just did it two times, or maybe two or three times that one episode. I mean, she definitely hasn't done it more than a handful of times.
Yeah.
Does she say Tywin?
No, she has never said Tywin before. I don't think.
No. She never says Tywin in the book, does she?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think, you know, her list is always very short-sighted.
Yeah, her list is always revolved around
her directly.
Who's getting
her?
Who's kicking dogs?
Not necessarily who's overseeing them or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Right. So is her wanting to kill Tywin a little weird then?
I don't know if that's about personal revenge or just helping her family win this war.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I suppose it is a little weird considering we haven't really gotten any hints to it and she hasn't been treated poorly by him. I mean, it makes sense to us because clearly he's the overlord of the bad guys.
Overlord.
For her. But, yeah, I'd say maybe it makes a little less sense for her just because, I mean, you know, we think that she knows, and, you know, we're thinking the same thing as her, but it did seem to be a tad out of place, perhaps.
Wait, what's out of place for who?
I was saying because her list of people that she wants dead is so revolving around her personal, being her
uh-huh.
being slighted by them, it seemed a little out of context that she would all of a sudden, like, consider stabbing him in the neck with a steak knife.
Yeah, it doesn't feel that all of a sudden to me because let's remember that she has been sitting in on all this war talk. She knows that Tywin has pretty much talked about like killing her brother right in front of her.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she tried to take those plans with that note that we weren't really sure what it said. That Littlefinger left on the table. So I think she's getting an education from this situation, too, and it makes sense that she would start to think bigger because of it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It's just we haven't seen her. Basically, all I'm saying is we haven't actually seen her think about it before now. That's what I'm saying. So it seems like kind of a drastic action to go from picking up a note to being like, yeah, I'm going to kill this guy.
Yeah.
But definitely a hint of what might be to come. Later on. How about we get to see the mountain?
Yeah.
That's definitely a different actor from the first season, right?
Yeah.
No, it's not. He just didn't have any lines from the first season.
Are you sure? He looked a lot less wide.
I'm almost positive it's the exact same actor.
Okay.
He just didn't say anything. His voice was so wooden it threw me off for a second also. I mean, for such a big dude, you know, I mean, Tywin's got a more manly voice than he does.
Mm-hmm. And he definitely, I mean, he didn't seem, I mean, he was clearly tall.
Yeah, he was
But he
tall.
Didn't seem mountainous to me.
No, he had on those Brienne flats.
Yes, yes he did. I would,
They should have had Jorge Murison playing the Mountain.
Yeah, they should have.
I don't know if that would have worked. I think they could have put any.
He's got acting experience.
That's true. I think they could have put any NFL offensive lineman as the Mountain, and he would have been more mountainous than the guy that they put in there. But he did have a very deep voice. So that's a plus.
I wonder if it was a performance enhancement, like Littlefinger's voice.
Oh, Littlefinger's voice. Let's go down to King's Landing, where we get some more of Jimmy TV's favorite character, Miss Sansa Stark.
Hey!
And...
Since she been my favorite character?
Ever since she flowered.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
We all know how Jimmy TV likes to roll.
Oh, that was so gross.
No, but...
That was the sound of the bread being ready in the oven to Jimmy TV.
You mean the smell?
That was a lot of blood.
Yeah. What? It was gross. She had a nice little period dream going there, too.
Yeah.
Is that what happens?
It happens to Bagman every month.
Mm, it's awful. I'm not right for like a week and a half.
He dreams about lollies every night for eight days in a row.
Who doesn't dream about lollies, though, Joe? Come on.
Great scene between her and Cersei.
Yeah, it was a great scene between her and Cersei. I thought it was interesting to see her and Shay
have a little bond sesh.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then Shay, in fact, then going to threaten a different handmaiden with a knife.
Yeah.
Which I thought was completely out of character for her.
It definitely came out of nowhere.
No, I don't think so. I mean, like, I think it's been kind of hinted at that she sees herself in Sansa. Like, you know, here someone is telling Sansa what to do at an early age. You know, maybe she, same situation that she was in, she fled.
Yeah, out of character isn't how I would describe it, because I think that's a running theme on this show, that people get thrust into these positions that they weren't planning on being in, and then they start to take on the role. So she's supposed to take care of my love, and she just kind of grows to start to care for her.
I suppose so. And also, we don't know much about Shay's character in the first place, I suppose, so...
True.
It can't be out of character if we don't know much about her. But I thought it was definitely surprising that she went to go threaten a handmaiden with a knife, not to tell Cersei. Considering I think we've only had one other scene, right? With Sansa and Shay together?
Yeah, I think so.
Something like that.
A really tense scene they had.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, then Sansa and Cersei chatting it up. Cersei confiding in Sansa, which was very interesting. And hating on Joffrey the entire episode. So apparently, we aren't the only ones.
Cersei's had enough.
She's struggling with that. She's struggling
Joffrey.
With that.
He wasn't even in this episode, and I was just like, my mind was wandering of hating him.
Oh, what was it wandering about? How would you like him to be had this episode?
I would shove a Pokeball in his mouth and then summon Charizard.
Fantastic.
TV got that.
Yeah, that might Pokemon. Be the dorkiest.
Love it.
The dorkiest execution I've ever heard of.
It'd be pretty grim.
I thought it was pretty interesting that Cersei was drawing so many parallels from her and Robert's relationship to what Sansa and Joffrey would potentially have. So I mean, that's why I think Cersei was being so kind of I wouldn't say loving towards her, but
Cersei's having a rough go of it, isn't she?
Yeah, she really is.
She's fallen to pieces.
She really has.
Well, I mean,
Marcella leaving's really thrown her off.
Yeah, it's interesting because if I remember correctly, in the book, after the first book, Cersei's never really nice to Sansa again, right?
She's always
like nothing like
backhanded in her niceness. Mm-hmm. No, yeah, she's definitely never like this, and definitely never like she is with Tyrion later, where she's straight up hating on Joffrey. That definitely never happens.
Yeah. So clearly a very interesting conversation. I found, I mean, when she was comparing Robert to Joffrey, clearly that's not an apt comparison, considering Robert was just a dude. He was just a dude.
Wait, when does she do that? Because then later when she's talking with Tyrion, she's like, oh, no, he's not like Robert.
Well, wasn't her point more that wasn't her point more that, you know, Robert was the one who went off hunting when she was giving birth, and it was Jaime who stood by her side, and she was making a point that Joffrey's not going to do that for you.
Yeah, that's what I was getting out of it.
Mm. Yeah.
That Joffrey's not like Robert, but her relationship, Cersei's relationship with Robert's like what Sansa's relationship with Joffrey will be like.
Yeah, where she's going to have a lot of alone time, and she's just going to have to love up on her chillins.
Exactly. And should only love up on her children,
mm-hmm.
for fear that she will be weaker.
Yeah.
That's right.
I feel like we have at least two or three quotes along those same lines. The more people you love, the weaker you are.
Yeah. I also, before we wander too far from it, I really enjoyed the scene between Sansa and Dog.
Sandor. Clegane the Hound.
Yes.
They always have some weird scenes where, like, she's trying to be nice.
They have an interesting relationship.
Yeah, there's some people that love the Sansan relationship on the internet webs.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, people leave that shit up.
I mean, it's a good relationship. it's always interesting to see that the dog never... The hound never kind of allows himself to at least seem weaker, I suppose, in Sansa's eyes. Even though it's clear that he does care for her because he saved her a few times now. So,
and what's even more kind of interesting is that he's not even. I mean, he's incredibly more smiley in this TV show than he is in the books.
Oh yes,
and the books he's so much more abrasive, even though. He keeps, you know, at the same time defending Sansa and coming to her aid and whatnot. And actually, earlier today, I was just dicking around doing stuff and was on the internet looking at some Game of Thrones stuff. And I came across Sandor Clegane's audition tape, and we're gonna need to put that in the post because it will scare the living shit out of you.
Done and done.
How long is it?
It's only two and a half, three minutes.
Excellent. That will definitely be in the post on the website for sure.
Were you going to have something to say if he had said it's like 10 minutes long?
Oh, well, I was going to say we should pause the pod and we should watch it and then discuss it.
Oh.
Cut all this stuff out, Batman.
I'll see what I'll do. But yeah, no, so it's always nice to see Sansa trying to be nice to the Hound and then the Hound being like, nope, but I'll be there anyway, so... They've got a very interesting relationship. I enjoyed the Tyrion-Cersei conversation that we previously mentioned as well,
yes.
Where Cersei continues to hate on Joffrey, which definitely doesn't happen in the book ever. But it was nice to see her and Tyrion not hate each other so much.
That's about as tender as you're going to get.
I love that when he was walking towards her at the end. He was going to touch her. Yeah, he was like, oh, she could really use a hug. Then kind of got two steps closer. I was like, man, I should probably just like put my hand on her shoulder. Then he got two steps closer. I was like, maybe I should just hold her hand. Then he just stopped.
And she was just looking at him like, what the fuck?
What are you coming in for here right now? What's going on?
How awkward must it be to, like, talk to your sister and know that she's fucked your brother?
And that was the first time that she's come out and told him, right?
I mean, yeah, that's the first time actually admitted it besides with Ed.
Been open about it. So, yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying with Tyrion. I mean, like, obviously, so I'm like, sure Tyrion knew that already, but he's like, oh, Christ, you know, she's really talking to me about this right now,
she's
huh?
She's really hurting if she's talking to me about this.
He's like, oh, shit.
Her and Jaime are both starting to freely admit it.
Jaime always has, more or less, hasn't he? I mean, once people started... saying that once people kind of thought it, then I don't think he's ever been.
Well, have we seen him on the show talk about it before?
I mean, it's not. Yeah,
he straight up told Catelyn Stark that he was banging his sister, didn't he? At one point.
A couple times, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly how he put it.
Yeah.
But he always does it with that sort of snarky grin on his face, so you never
know. He might be lying. Yeah.
I also find it interesting, again, maybe this is where we get something that has been left out in the book, the whole chain in Blackwater Bay there, where Tyrion says, you know, how the hell are we going to stop them?
I think we're getting that, dude. We're getting the chain next episode, and then it's going to be used in the ninth episode.
Yeah.
We called it. We called it about the chain.
Jimmy TV was on that.
They didn't want to do it in the first two episodes. We forget about it. Yeah. I can't have that.
We've already forgotten about the wildfire, pretty much, except Cersei said we're going to rain fire down.
Exactly.
So that reminded us.
You
got to keep that
reminded words. Mm-hmm, exactly. But yeah, no. So that was a nice little conversation, and yeah, the fact that Cersei is hating on Joffrey so much is kind of
it makes sense. He's a total asshole.
Well,
what do you think about the scene with the Kingslayer?
As great as the Tywin scene was with Arya, I thought both of Jaime's other scenes were fantastic. Were the two best of this episode.
Oh yeah, no, Jaime has not been in the series that much this season. I don't know if he's been in it at all. But yeah, no, he definitely brought it for this episode. He had three real nice scenes, three real classic Jaime scenes.
Yeah, I guess they're what that are you that middle third one when he gets brought back in, is that the one that you're talking about?
Yeah, where he's like dragged on the horse and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, he had a good line there where he said that I enjoyed, at least, where he told Catelyn Stark that she's become a real she-wolf. There's not much fish in her.
Yes.
Alluding to the house animals.
House Tully.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, but yeah, Jaime was definitely on top of his game, especially, I mean, we get more of... We haven't really seen Jaime be, like, the awesome fighter that he says he is, and everyone says he is. But we definitely get more of his character here, where he's got a plan and he's not afraid of what happens to anyone else. Like, clearly with his escape by killing the lesser Lannister there.
That was a great line. When Alton said he didn't want to embarrass our family in front of the family. Mm-hmm. That was sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and we also got to see him get a little bit of his mojo back as well. You know, get a little bit
by killing a family member. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And killing the Karstark, Torrhen Karstark.
Gotta do it.
Yeah, as soon as Rob told that dude that to get his son Torrhen to guard the camp, I was like, oh, that guy's gonna die.
And we also, for the first time, get Jaime and Brienne in the same place.
Oh, man.
That was brilliant.
He had great comedy lines the entire episode. He let off the Alton conversation with she the fat one. And there's only one fat Lannister, you know it stuff. But yeah, then is that a woman? He's waiting to say, where did you find this beast?
Oh,
love it.
So that was just an excellent time. The first time that they'll be together for a little bit, perhaps. Yep. One last place to go, of course, is across the Narrow Sea. I think that's what it's called.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And we go over to Karth. Dany is still pissed off about the dragons. Even pissed off at Jorah. Jorah is... She's just pissed off in general. She does not want to trust anyone ever again.
She's like, child.
Mm-hmm. She's like, child.
And then we get...
And then the 13 get it.
Yes, then the 13 go bye-bye. I want to say first off that I'm going to really miss KG. Because every time he was on screen, it just brought a smile to my face. His voice was so ridiculous.
Oh, no, dude. The Spice King was all... The Spice King was... Was on point over the place.
Yes.
He will be missed. He will be missed.
But how about the alliance here, the Zero Piat Pre alliance with the dragons? I mean, I think we mentioned last week that clearly the dragons are gonna be what gets Dany to go to the House of the Undying. But the fact that Zaro allied himself with Piat Pre there. And Zaro actually being given a little something else to do where he wants to become King of Karth, if you will. And everyone gets a nice little jolly out of that. before they get killed. But what, I mean, what do you think, is Zorro, what do you think Zorro's
The thing that kind of pissed me off about this was, if that's what happened, why would they kill all of her people? I mean, you know, she only had like 10 or 15 people. Why did they have to be killed for them to steal the dragons? I feel like they could have done it so much easier and less bloody and just.
Why is
that
a problem? Their sack?
What were they guarding?
Yeah, but why would they piss off Daenerys this much? I mean, like I feel like if they're going to end up using Dany at some point, mm-hmm. they should at least, try not to completely fucking just throw their relationship where they're in the shitter.
Yeah,
like
no, that's the weirdest part about the whole plan is that they're still trying to keep Dany in it as like a central figure.
Wait, but did they even need her to be happy about it? Why is she a central figure? She's the mother of the dragons, but she'll take care of her dragons, and then she'll do whatever the hell Zorro and Pyat pre-tell her to do.
I think
she's all by herself, right?
That's how they're looking at it, is that, you know, she's just a woman. Her role, they'll tell her what to do, and she'll control the dragons, and they'll control her. I think that's...
Yeah, so they don't care about her Khalasar. They're like, fuck to your Khalasar. We just want you and your dragons.
I think Tyler Perry made a mistake in... you know, doing this because it's going to be harder to get in their pants now.
I think they've written that part off.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Definitely Pyat Pri has. I'm not sure if he's interested.
I don't think Pyat Pri can get into anyone's pants. I'm not quite sure what's going on with that whole thing.
Are we talking about Tyler Perry?
No, we're talking about the guy.
Oh.
Talking about that freaky dude.
Multiple man.
I don't know. It felt like when Pyat Pri was talking to the 13, it made it sound like he planned for Dany to have a larger role than to just take care of the dragons. That's what I felt.
That's what I think also. Yeah, that's the impression I was getting also.
And then he killed the 13.
Yeah.
Yeah, they fucked him up. Well, I guess he did. It was all him.
Him and hims.
Yeah.
Yes, but yeah, I don't know. So I guess it remains to be seen exactly what their plan is. But I got the same feeling as Jimmy TV over there that they were still going to try to use Dany for more than just, hey, look, these are your dragons. You're not going to want to see them killed, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't know. But yeah, I think. Do we have anything else? I guess
yeah,
the last
then,
scene,
the
big
the
scene
very last scene.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where the Stark boys are hung and fried, I suppose, right? Burnt to a crisp? Is that what happened?
Delicious.
Yeah, I really enjoyed seeing Theon's face. Because, you know, he was kind of all proud of himself that he caught the kids, and here they are in all of their glory. And then when he saw them actually charred to a crisp and hung up, he had that... Oh God, I'm about to vomit. Look on his face.
Yeah,
did he not? Is that not how he thought they would look hanging up there? Like that? I mean, that just seemed a little odd.
It seemed like one of those. He has finally come to a realization, sort of thing.
He is so fucked.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, was that? That's what that face was. It wasn't being so disgusted in the bodies. It was more of a I'm so fucked about. That's why I'm about to throw up.
I think so.
Yeah, I think maybe a little bit of both.
He's like, this is not going the way I planned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Clearly. Alan, what did you feel about that? How did you feel about all that?
This is
your first time seeing all of it.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty messed up, and I also, I kind of felt the same way that it was a look of, I mean, it's one thing to imagine it, but to see it, I think he's not prepared for any of this. He has no experience, and I think that he was just a little disgusted by it. He's not ready for the reality of war. He just wants the spoils of it.
Mm-hmm. True that.
I would definitely agree. But yeah, I think other than that, unless, do you guys have anything to say about that?
About the episode or that?
Just that particular thing. No? All right. We got anything else to say about the episode?
I got a few more things just to quickly mention at least. We got Game that. Books. We got Ygritte saying, you know nothing, Jon Snow. and it didn't come off as like a little teenage girl saying something or anything like that. It wasn't nearly as grating as it was in the book, her saying it. So I enjoyed that. It was just dripping with contempt, and it was fantastic. And I'm glad they didn't. I'm glad that wasn't like the first thing she said on the screen. That would have been super corny and cheesy. So I'm glad they withheld that for a day. I also really enjoyed Rob and Lady Taliza. If we're gonna keep calling her that. Their scene. I think they have much better chemistry than Ygritte and Jon Snow do.
Okay.
I look forward to seeing them in the coming episodes.
Fair enough.
Getting high on Milk of the Poppy.
And doing their thing.
We also got to see how Rob has, I don't know if he just said this or not, but how he wants them all to be treated. So he's kind of doing what Lady Taliza told him to and, like, think about the after effects. Basically do what Theon isn't and trying to think of how everything is going to shape up after the fighting is done. Where he says, you know, for all of the patients or whatever towards the end of their little scene, so...
He's a real humanitarian.
And then the last two things were that I want to mention at least. Two things that were in the episode, and then there's also one thing that wasn't. Were two things Jamie mentioned. First, he really gave us a little bit more on Barrison Selmy, which so hopefully he'll crop back up here before the season's over, I'm hoping.
Yeah, what the hell happened to old Barrison?
Exactly. And then I also really enjoyed his last speech about having so many vows. I mean, that's pretty much Jamie in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was smart as well because he said the whole thing about, you know, you're supposed to follow the king and, you know, love your father and protect the innocent.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what's been going on with Jamie. And that's obviously how he justifies everything. And it does kind of make sense. I mean, you definitely start... Even as we see him kill a distant relative in the early episode, we certainly start to feel a little something for Jamie, I would say.
Jamie, I think, is one of the characters on the show, like the eunuch and others, who know that this is all a game, but he seems a little more jaded by it. You know, he's like a spoiled rich kid. He sees all these rules as just kind of bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. And actually, that brings me into the other thing I was going to say, which is where the hell has the eunuch been? I mean, we haven't seen Barrys in forever, or the newly released Master Pycelle. So I mean,
his new haircut.
There's definitely been some big people in King's Landing, and we just haven't gotten shit of.
Yeah, that's right, we haven't.
I assume if they're going to bring in this chain thing, we might end up seeing a little Varys next episode.
Chain.
I hope so.
Alan, it sounded like you've wanted to say something here.
My last two things I wanted to say were that I hope the next episode is called Tyler Perry's House of the Undying. And
I would not watch it.
Yes, you will.
I would not watch it.
You will watch. And also a little trivia. I don't know if you guys knew that Pons Mar served as the co-head of the Puppeteer Committee for SAG for 2 years.
Oh, Pons Mar.
I enjoy his work.
Yeah.
Doing it up. You gotta love some dinosaurs. But yeah, I think that's gonna do it for Game of Thrones. Jimmy TV.
I'll just send you all the YouTube link of Rory McCann's audition.
Excellent.
It's actually his audition's actually from a part that didn't make the series. They actually ended up giving it to Littlefinger, where he's explaining to Sansa how he got the scar on his face.
Okay.
Ooh. Nice. That was a good scene.
And he gets pretty nuts with it.
But yeah, all right, Jimmy TV, I suppose we'll see you maybe a little later.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to hang up. Just let me know.
Okay.
Okay.
Later.
All right.
Fuck the Rangers.
On to the Mad Men's. Dark Shadows Mad Men, right?
Dark Shadows, yes.
This was definitely an episode that set up a bunch more stuff. It was one of the ones that didn't seem like an episode in its own right, just more for setting up the rest of the season.
What makes you say that?
I don't know. I mean, it's not that... like, when I'm going to think of this season, I'm not going to think of this being, like, one of the pinnacle episodes where... You know, it doesn't seem like a Pantheon sort of episode. It seems more of an episode that is just... It's not filler. I'm not saying it's filler, but it's like...
Right. There are no major like plot developments or changes.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of sets up what's going to happen as opposed
that's
to
it. There was a lot of good stuff like Don trying to get his fastball back.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, but I'm not saying. Yeah.
I see what you're saying, though, that, like, I mean, I wouldn't...
it's more of a tactical
episode. I don't put this level... I don't put this episode beneath any others, but, yeah, we didn't get, like, any major plot points of the season. But I thought it stood out in its as a standalone episode just for the fact of the themes going through all the situations we were watching of jealousy and, you know, kind of envy of what others have.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely agree with that. I was just saying that it wasn't its own. I don't know. It wasn't as maybe as strong of a specific isolated episode as some of the previous ones had been.
I don't know. We got Big Betty getting that whipped cream.
Big Betty was back and forth with the weight.
Big Betty getting that whipped cream.
With the Weight Watchers and the turkey dinner and all of it,
she's losing a little bit of weight.
Yeah, she definitely lost a little weight. Yeah.
They definitely took a few layers off the fat suit.
Yeah, she's trying.
The Weight Watchers meeting, we clearly got a bunch of that. It was interesting to see as it was sort of like a direct. Denial maybe of like psychiatry, the whole psychiatry thing where she's tried that and now she's in this Weight Watchers thing where it's not the same thing, but it's, you know, it's supposed to be achieving the same goals. You know, it's trying to help your mental health as well as your physical health. Clearly it was more about the mental health, as people were only losing a half a pound per week, if you will. But it was also interesting to see all the women sort of gathered around together, trying to better themselves as opposed to just you know, trying to make themselves better for other people. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they're trying to lose weight for others, but it's also about becoming, you know, more, you know, it's about improving yourself. I don't know.
Where were they meeting?
Like a classroom?
Yeah, it looked like a classroom.
Wherever it was, it looked real depressing.
Yes. Yes.
I know that even today, I know that they meet in places like that, like rec centers and, you know, like offices that aren't being used later in the day or things like that. Mm-hmm. But I thought that all those scenes, this whole episode and those scenes specifically kind of were highlighting the shitty side of Betty Draper, of just how petty and selfish she can be, still is. She's still very much a little girl emotionally. Because all those scenes, you saw how she just couldn't even be happy for these people that she's supposed to be in a community with. The whole point of them getting together is to support each other. And if things aren't going well in her life or she has a hard time, she doesn't want to. She's not happy to hear that other people are doing well at the meeting.
Yeah, no, she really doesn't care about anyone except herself, which clearly is mirrored, or at least is clearly stated, with how she is using Sally in the episode to get back at Don.
That was messed up.
Oh, yeah.
That was classic Big Betty.
Yeah, it was. Sally was very much so like almost like a tennis ball in this episode, just being volley back and forth between Don and Betty and the household and that sort of stuff.
She was hilarious at the end when she was like, oh, yeah, we she saw pictures and talked very lovingly about her.
Oh, yeah.
That was a very, like, that shows that Sally mentally is really growing up. That's a very adult thing to understand, what she did, how she handled that situation.
Mm-hmm. It was hilarious, too.
Sally definitely... definitely had her sass pants on this episode.
Yeah.
If not, maybe even a tad bitchy as well. She clearly wasn't... She was much more conniving.
She's a child.
She's growing up, though. She's becoming a woman, Jose.
How old is she supposed to be?
I think she's supposed to be like 13,
13,
right?
14? They can't call her bitchy.
I don't know how old she is. Time is moving so... It's already Thanksgiving this season.
Last episode was in September, I believe, so...
Or at least, I don't know.
But no, I was saying the things that she was doing were there was much more thought into them as opposed to a little girl just doing, you know, just being upset or anything. Like, it seemed like Sally had her own goals to what she was doing and how she was doing it, as opposed to just, you know, acting out.
Yeah, well, you know, she holds Don in very high regard, obviously, but she really loves her dad and has a high opinion of him. And I think that was just complete shock to her to hear about Anna. I think it makes sense that she reacted so strongly, but then because she's a child, completely misdirected her anger towards Megan. Mm-hmm. And, you know, handled it very immaturely. You know, she's a kid, but you know, it was still immature.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of getting back to where we were beforehand with Betty losing weight, Don definitely trying to get the creative juices flowing again, with some pretty nonsensical claptrap there with his microphone. I don't. What do you call those things?
When he was doing
the phone.
Yeah, the dictaphone, exactly.
When he was Dick doing Whitman to phone.
When he was doing his devil voice in the meetings, I was cracking up.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, when he was doing the devil voice there.
It was gold.
Yeah, this was, you know, it worked. You know, they ended up selling it, but this idea was it was kind of forced, and you could see on people's faces that they liked it, but something about it was kind of holding people back. They're kind of like, oh, okay.
Yeah, no, it seemed almost like not the easy way out, but it was like, you know, everyone could have thought that sort of thing. You know, they mentioned how it was clever a bunch. And, you know, something as clever is a little bit different than saying something as, you know, creative.
Yeah, or saying something that is funny.
Yeah, exactly. So, clearly Ginsberg's idea of bringing down the establishment, I guess, or whatever, with the snowballs, was definitely more thought out and a little deeper than Don's, you know, devil idea. But
yeah, it was a little more in step with the time.
Yeah, exactly, and it was definitely more forward thinking and kind of what it was basically kind of Don's kind of reminiscent of Don's pitch from last season, where he was pitching the bikini outfit, I think it was, where he was with the family company and he had the slogan like covering up a naked woman, a naked woman's top or whatever. So that was, I thought that was kind of interesting, where those Ginsberg's pitch in this episode and the pitch from last episode kind of had the same, you know, forward thinking and screwing with the establishment sort of thing, but Don, because of jealousy, I suppose. Or to at least to make sure that everyone knew his pimp hand was still strong, decided to make sure that the only pitch that was going to be mentioned was his. So.
Yeah, it was just embarrassing watching him pitch it the initial time. It's like, oh, and the first thing anyone thinks about, a snowball's chance in hell. And then they like cut to Peggy and Sal and they're like, yeah, that's exactly the first thing that we think. It just like shows how out of touch he is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or at least how his creative muscle has not been flexed in quite some time.
Yeah, it's a combination of that and, I think, an age. Not like he's, you know, old, but he's not on the forefront of, you know, he's thinking, if he had maybe said that to Cooper or something, Cooper might have been like, oh, yes, that is the phrase that I think of. But I think that maybe that's a little bit too old-fashioned even.
And even, Pete Campbell's like, oh, yes, of course, a snowball's chance in hell, when they're, like, kind of all circling around, dividing it. And I don't know if that's what he actually thought, but, like, it kind of shows that like, how he's on the wrong side of the generation gap, too, or at least would, like, wants to be. Like, he wants to be Don or whatever, whereas Don is, you know, going the way of the dinosaur to bring it back to Terra Nova.
Yeah, because we always want to bring it back to Terra Nova.
Yes, we do.
But clearly this whole episode here with the snowball, the snowball part of the episode is setting up some real choice Don versus Ginsberg moments.
Oh my God!
Later on in the show, which is exactly what I've been hoping for since Ginsberg got hired.
Yeah, you you nailed it when we first met him, that he was kind of being set up as the new Don.
Mm-hmm. And only one can survive. But yeah, no, I'm real interested to see if Don can get his fastball back, and or if he can't, what he does with Ginsburg. Because the best part of the show for me is always Don thinking of ideas and, you know, going through them and sifting through them and then pitching them and making them better. So I'm hoping we're going to get some more awesome Don work for the rest of the season, because we haven't gotten very much in this first half or so of the season. But they're definitely setting up this whole Don versus Ginsburg rivalry, which is...
How many episodes do we have left?
Was this the 8th episode? 9th episode? I mean, we don't have that many.
I think there's maybe like 3 episodes left.
It can't be any more than 5.
I'm looking it up. I'm on it.
Yeah.
You guys keep talking.
But Don, you know, he may be slowing down at work, but he still is very sharp when it comes to dealing with people in the workplace and out in public. Because that scene in the elevator with Ginsburg, my God.
Oh,
he just destroyed that man.
Yeah, he did. Ginsburg was donezo after that.
He didn't even need to... It didn't take him a moment to think of it. He just nailed him.
Well, I mean, it might be interesting to mention that happened at the end of the episode as well. So perhaps now that Don is back in a creative mindset, maybe all of it will come back to him naturally, as opposed to how it was kind of labored and disappointing in this episode. So we'll see what happens with that, definitely. I can't wait. But we've also had another main theme of this episode was sort of people getting their jollies out of everyone else's misfortunes.
There's four episodes left. Who was getting their jollies out of other people's misfortune?
Well, I mean, there were clearly a few Peggy moments where she was very smiley about the fact that Ginsburg's pitch did not make it to the actual pitch, Ginsburg's idea.
Oh, really? Was she?
She was?
Yeah, she was definitely smiling about that. You guys didn't notice that?
I don't agree with that. Well, I mean, maybe I just missed it. I don't remember seeing that. Like, when Crane came back and told them all that it was Don's idea that they took?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Peggy definitely was happy to see Ginsburg kind of get put back in his place a little bit.
It's possible. I don't think that she has anything against Ginsburg other than his lack of filter. So it could be possible that she enjoyed seeing that get put back.
I mean, I think she might be. She also might be a little jealous as well of his creativity, I suppose.
It's possible. She didn't seem to be when they first hired him, and the asshole cartoonist was telling her to be wary of hiring someone so talented. She seems very confident in her work. But regardless, we definitely, from all her looks, we know that at least she doesn't like how he's just, his willingness to just say anything in front of Don, and he has this complete lack of fear of saying the wrong thing to get fired.
Well, I mean, let's also not forget that Peggy's two ideas were basically for Hines, and they both got rejected, while Ginsburg's ideas, he's had at least one that was picked up.
They
even made a point when Joan was in. What was she showing Don? Was she showing like ads that they were going to try to submit for awards or whatever?
But it was the portfolio that
the New York Times magazine article. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. So basically pointing out that Ginsburg's basically been running the show as far as creative skills. Speaking of the New York Times piece, how hilarious was it when Pete Campbell said that the guy was a rat bastard?
Pete Campbell got pwned.
He did. Oh, yeah, I love it.
Journalist.
He's such a stiff. Oh, my God.
And Don definitely put him back in his place, too, after that
yes.
whole thing.
Yes.
Don
yeah.
was not pleased to be awoke.
No.
Who dareth awaketh me?
And it was hilarious, too, that he was like, God, these who are these people that look like Peter, Paul, and Mary?
Yeah.
Which I found quite hilarious as well. But Megan and her friend had that little flare up there in the beginning. Megan didn't have very much to do in this episode, I suppose, at least career wise. You know, she was kind of the brunt. She was getting the brunt of both Sally and Don.
And her friend. We're kind of seeing what real struggling actors think of her.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah. I mean, it was interesting to see as well that Megan was laughing at the fact how overly melodramatic the soap opera was. When, you know, yes. she even said, if I was, you know, if I was, I would love to get the part, but now that she's at the pinnacle almost, I mean, not of her profession, but, you know, in a very nice lifestyle, she can be a little bit more judgmental and critical of some of the things that she probably would have been exactly as melodramatic about when she was still a struggling actress.
She wasn't feeling the Dark Shadows script.
No, she was not. What else? We got Roger and Jane. After we thought maybe Jane might be done, Roger bringing her back for a little Jew salesmanship with Manischewitz.
Yes.
First off, when they were mentioning that there was a Jewish wine that they were trying to sell to the normals, if you will, how many of us thought that it was clearly going to be Manischewitz? Like, there's no other Jewish wine out there, right?
Yeah, I mean, it came to my mind like the moment he said it.
Mm-hmm. And then they brought Lippmann back too. They brought the little Lippmann.
Yes.
Making his way into the 60s Mad Men universe at the weird hula hut sort of restaurant.
They're just going to start bringing in all 90s sitcom stars for these guest roles.
That's how it's going. That's how it's looking right now. But what, I mean, Roger, I don't know how I feel about Roger's final speech there when he leaves Jane. I can't tell if he was being completely sincere and the acting was kind of off.
What is he saying?
She pretty much called him out, and I was going to say that I agree. I thought that there was something strange about his delivery of it, but I think that there was some measure of sincerity in it, because this isn't the first time he's been called out on this aspect of his personality, but Jane was pretty much calling him out on the fact that he has everything. Why does he still feel the need to take?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I don't think he had sinister motives when he wanted to bang
a very hot woman.
Yeah. But
who was also his former wife. I mean, it's not like he's not doing, he hasn't been there before. But yeah, I would agree that his motives definitely didn't seem sinister. It just seemed like he was, you know, the spark was a little bit reignited, and
they're a little tipsy on the Manischewitz.
And he was, I'm sure he was threatened and kind of reinvigorated by the young guy at the restaurant who was
yachts.
I fucking yachts. His wife nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
That guy didn't give a shit that Roger was there.
No, he really didn't.
Bernard was all about some Jane.
Bernard.
But yeah, no, like, it just seemed weird when Roger was saying sorry or whatever, and I don't know why or whatever. I mean, maybe just because so many of Roger's lines are delivered, you know, sarcastically, it seemed maybe it was instant. Maybe that's why I think it wasn't completely sincere. But it definitely seemed like the acting was a little bit off or something in that particular scene.
Yeah, something was strange there. Or you might be right. It might just be we're not used to having him have a sincere moment like that. He's not one to apologize ever.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think, I don't know, there's not much else I want to talk about here. The only other thing that I would like to talk about, or at least mention, I don't know how much talking there will be done, but the smog warning that Megan kind of brings up when Don wakes up and he says it's hot as hell in there. I thought it was interesting that they had smog warnings back in the 60s. I don't know. I mean, I don't know much about it, but I mean, clearly it's not going to do much. I mean, air is air. It's going to get through, but yeah.
But they don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess is the point that that's, you know, back then they had drills where you hide under your desk in case of a nuclear attack.
Very true.
I think it's just kind of a new idea.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Megan is young and overly cautious about it. Because, yeah,
again, maybe it's the divide between Don being unaware and Megan kind of knows what's going on in the world.
I just found it interesting that they even had smog warnings back then. So, and it definitely looks smoggy as shit out there.
But I think it was another, the whole point of that was alluding to the title of Dark Shadows, that kind of idea that something dark and foul is in the air, and that this might be the sign of troubling times ahead, kind of thing. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that definitely, I would say it definitely ties back in.
Thank you for making me feel confident about that analysis.
Yes. I was thinking the exact same thing, but I wanted you to dangle out on the rope a little bit to let you know who was really running this podcast.
Thank you, Don.
But yeah, I don't think there's much else I want to talk about. Do you guys have anything specifically that you guys would like to mention?
No. Other than I'm really enjoying Joan hasn't been in this season very much, but all of her scenes are great. She's very in touch with people's needs, even when they don't say them. Mm-hmm. That just like she immediately reassured Don about how this is all still his work. The mm-hmm. moment that he was noticing Ginsburg's name on everything. And I think she did the same thing with Peggy, comforting her about her boyfriend and mm-hmm. Don when Megan was quitting. So Joan is great as
usual. She's good. She's good, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited that we're going to get some Elaine-heavy episode next week, if you can believe the previews.
Landerbug's coming back?
Yeah, it looked like he was prominently featured in the preview. Of course, what can you really tell about those things?
I don't watch them.
I love them just because they're so ridiculous. Because you could never really, I mean, besides when they put someone in there, you don't know what the hell's going on. I don't know. They're just a fun time.
Yeah.
Speaking of fun times, check out n-the-bag2gs.com. Bagman's going to be putting up all sorts of new articles this week, right, Bagman?
Yeah, we've got a lot of stuff going on. We'll talk about some, we'll probably do a little NBA playoff talk, a little NHL playoff talk as well. We've got a podcast that should be coming out sometime very soon in regards to action movies. Listing off our criteria for what makes a good action movie and such. So definitely come check that out. And, yeah, we should have the normal slate of delightfulness as well coming out on the website this week. So definitely make sure to come by and check us out at in-the-bag2gs.com.
You've been teased.
Yes, you have.
You've been cheese bagged.
No.
Or is it tea bags like attorneys general? Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
You've been tea bagged.
Jose, before we go, I know how big of a Diablo fan you are.
Ooh.
The computer games. With Diablo 3 coming out this week, correct?
Tomorrow, maybe.
Yes. Are you going to purchase?
No.
No, why not?
I have no free time. I have no free time. I would love to. You should probably just cut this part out because it's very boring. But, yeah, I don't have any free time to play Diablo 3. Are you going to get it?
It's very disappointing. I, unfortunately, do not have a machine that is capable of running it.
You guys are talking like robots right now.
Yeah, it's quite disappointing. Jimmy TV is our last hope.
Mm-hmm. I am a huge fan of Diablo, but not the game, the deity.
Okay.
Or the New Jersey Devils.
Interesting.
Ah.
Or the pizza.
Jersey Nueva.
Yes. But yeah, no, so I think that's going to do it for this podcast. We'll come at you guys, of course, next week with the same sort of nonsensical claptrap that you've become accustomed to on this podcast.
That's two claptraps in this podcast, too.
delicious.
Are we playing Donkey Kong Country? I apologize for this podcast.
Yes, Alan is not on top of his game. He put all of his efforts into mush last week, and since his brain has not been the same.
His turn to mush.
Ooh.
But yeah, we'll catch you guys later.
Bye-bye.